We are looking forward our way from Studio C in the 511 Studios in the Brewery District, just south of downtown Columbus, Ohio. Hi, this is Brett. Many of us are struggling to ensure our older relatives are provided excellent medical attention so their needs are met. However, this is not always the case. Today, we're going to delve into the research, the education, and the services provided by the Ohio State University's College of Medicine Office of Geriatrics and Gerontology. Did you see how I added all the thes in there so I can get to that University?
again, my alma mater is featured on one of our podcasts.
There
this is a part of Brett and I what is it?
I don't know if you call it a feud.
No, it's not
necessarily.
A feud.
It's just
one-upsmanship.
One-upsmanship.
I get Ohio State and Otterbein and all of my DeSales.
I can't get anything all of my Miami.
And Brett keeps saying he's too far away from his school.
Whatever.
Anyway, thanks, Brett.
Sure.
Thank you. We appreciate it from the Ohio State University. Let me introduce our guest expert today. Jennifer Bechtel is the program manager for geriatrics and gerontology at Ohio State. We're going to discuss the various programs that she supports and directs to ensure that our medical professionals of all ages are on track to serve older patients. Jennifer, thanks so much for coming to see us today.
Thank you both for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure. But before we jump in, let's talk about you. Tell us about yourself, your background, how you came into this career field.
Well, I am a Buckeye born and raised.
Go. There you go.
Grew up in Clintonville before it was hip. So it was one of those scenarios that, you know, two of the greatest people in my life that are mentors were my grandparents. And so I was always very, very close with them. And I went to school in Cincinnati at Xavier and got my degree in communications. And at that time, it was kind of like I knew I had a really soft heart and I wanted to make a difference, but I didn't know you could actually match your professional career with something you're passionate about. You know, the whole head smart, heart smart thing for me was really important. I can't just do a job for the sake of making a paycheck. I have to feel like I'm making a difference. So it wasn't until I had the experience with hospice and my grandparents and seeing what an amazing example of how our healthcare system works well. That's what hospice truly is. And so, you know, the multiple disciplines working together for the sake of the patient and the family, that's where I was like, wait a minute, you know, how can I use my communications background to get people to think differently about hospice? It's not about death and dying. It's about life and living.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really where my passion started from. And it just became a quest of when I was working with the State Hospice Association then at the time, I became a certified grief recovery specialist. And I used children's books and the concept of bibliotherapy to open up conversations with adults about how children grieve, how we all grieve. And so using those books as conversation starters really opened up people to the opportunity to kind of accept hospice more because they're a partner in your healing in that. And so it then became a quest for, all right, I was struggling with this when I was in school. You know, I wish somebody would have been around while I was in school to come in with presentations and say, here's a career opportunity. They didn't do career development back then like that. And so any opportunity that I have to say, this is a possibility for you, and it's a place that if you really want to make a difference, you need to get involved with it.
When Jennifer and I first talked about doing this podcast, I mentioned to her that many, many years ago when I was at Ohio State working in continuing education, we used to do programs with gerontology and geriatrics, and they had, it's been tough. It's been a tough area to try to build that knowledge and awareness to the rest of the medical community.
It really is. And it's one of those, like, especially when you look at it from like a state perspective and the budget, you know, there's a lot of money that is poured into education, post and secondary education. But there's just as much money that has to deal with, you know, Medicaid and where our dollars go to support that. And so trying to get them to, as you're looking at the number of post-secondary programs that universities offer for education versus the number of gerontology programs that we have in the state. There's only five now, university-wise, that have a gerontology focus across the state. And so you're really trying to find ways to honor the information that needs to be taught as we're all aging. Mm-hmm. Nobody's not doing it. So we have to figure out how to weave that into every aspect of our life and make it be a more positive perspective instead of something to be feared. And it's not chronic illness. It's not frailty. It's life and living.
Right. As opposed to looking at the end, look at the journey throughout.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let me build a scenario here. We've all been through this. We go to a medical appointment. We wait in the lobby or the exam room for goodness knows how long. We walk into that exam room. We're sitting there longer and longer. A doctor, who looks like your granddaughter, breezes in, breezes out within minutes. And we sit there with this glassy-eyed look going like, what? It just happened. What's the goal of your office? Why is it important that medical professionals know and understand the needs of their older patients?
Well, again, we go back to that concept of, you got to treat somebody the way that you want to be treated. And doctors are very knowledgeable and for very good reason. All those clinical terms that they throw at you, as a patient, you need to advocate for yourself, regardless of what your age is. And so if your doctor's telling you something that you don't understand, we call it health literacy. And you really need to be able to understand what your diagnosis is, what your options are, and be able to say, I don't understand. It's okay to not understand what's going on in that. But it's also one of those, one of the focuses that I have is empathy-based training for our physicians and trying to weave that more into every phase of the med school curriculum, because they definitely have to cover, the nuts and bolts of, what the neurological system is, what our muscle system is, but how we sprinkle aging and those concepts into everything that we are teaching within the med school curriculum, that's where you can get the students to kind of shift their mindset and say, I never really thought of it that way.
It's you said that in regards to advocating for yourself when you're in the doctor's office. It's almost like we need to flip it, kind of going, you feel that the doctor is, oh my gosh, the doctor, okay, thank you, kind of thing. It's like, wait a minute, you're working for me, dude.
Right, and they're people too.
Right.
So it's one of those that it's like, I get that you're an expert in what you know,
right,
but I'm an expert in me. And so trying to get you to tell me what you think the path should be, give me all of the options because it's ultimately my choice to help figure out. And I think that's one of the things too in trying to open up with our med school students to the possibilities of working with an older population. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what your specialty is going to be, you're going to be dealing with an older adult population at some point in your career.
Mm-hmm.
And as the demographic shift grows exponentially in these next 10 years, for the first time, one of the statistics that I always throw out that kind of opens people's eyes is by the year 2034, our population 65 and older in the United States is going to outnumber 18 and younger for the first time ever in U.S. history.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we doing to prepare for that? If we're already realizing, and COVID was a big wake-up call in many respects, but especially the way that it impacted our older adult population.
And how the medical community really had to scramble.
Right, exactly. And so I think that's one of the things that using that as a paradigm and an opportunity for them to say, we survived it.
Mm-hmm.
We did. And that's the only word that I have to describe it because it was a struggle trying to figure out what was going to work on any given day. And we did the best that we could with what we had at that time. But here's the difference. We know that our population is going to be changing. We know that it's going to be growing by leaps and bounds. We know it's coming. So we can change that. And if we do not, if we choose to keep those glasses not looking and stay siloed, then our aging population will be the next pandemic that we have to deal with. And that's not a world that I want to live in.
Right.
Yeah.
I liked that notion that you just brought up too, that it is okay for us to ask the medical professional questions. I can remember my grandparents, one issue was not knowing English that well.
Right.
That silent generation literally was silent. They did not question anything. My parents were a little bit better. I think my generation is going to be even more demanding and asking more questions, but it's going to get even worse. So we may be aging, but we are going to want more information. And,
right.
And so the medical community needs to understand that. I do have to give a shout out for the Ohio State University's medical complex. I can remember growing up, nobody went to OSU Hospital. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really didn't dare. You didn't walk out. They have done phenomenal work at improving the hospital. It's a mega city now over there. But
it is.
I used to be able to get around pretty easily, and now I'm pretty lost when I go there. But they've done a really good job of building programs, building services, building expertise, communicating on that social platforms. And everywhere you go in the hospital, they got great little booklets and pamphlets and flyers and all that kind of stuff. MyChart's a phenomenal program, and mm-hmm. they do that really well. But I still go in sometimes glassy-eyed. I did an appointment last week, and it was pretty interesting. You know, and I'm like, it's a good thing it wasn't an issue or an emergency, because I kind of walked out of there just shaking my head going, oh, my God, what just happened? Anyway,
It seems that organizations that serve seniors are scrambling for not just workers, but those who are dedicated to serving the population. How's the college focusing in on this issue, promoting medical fields that concentrate on older patients?
Well, and one of the biggest things that we're doing is making sure that we have the conversations earlier on in the curriculum and earlier on in the careers, because again, you know, not knowing what is an option out there is key. And what's really sad is you often hear, you know, with the healthcare field, that it's a calling, especially in the nursing aspect. You hear that more so, that, you know, it's a true calling. You do what you do because you're meant and called to do it. Well, that's where it's a very different thing in working with an older population, because it does not pay well, and I don't know why. And so that's the misperception of us needing to try and figure out what aspect of what we do professionally can change that narrative. If it's policy, if it's reimbursement, if it's education, because if someone who can make more being a greeter at Walmart than they can being an STNA caring for someone in the hospital system, that's wrong.
That's kind of backwards.
It's very backwards.
Yeah.
So trying to get, again, society to open their eyes to, you know, we've wanted to like not address it. Again, it's the elephant in the room that is always going to be constant there. So trying to make sure that we can introduce these. And before I came to Ohio State, I worked for an organization called Leading Age Ohio, and we had a program there called Careers That Love You Back. And so you identify what the role was in like an adult life plan community. If it was the cook, if it was the activities director, and you dissected what it was going to take schooling wise, what your skill sets needed to be, what your average salary range would be. And that way you could say, when you're talking with students, you know, these are options for you to consider. Are you the kind of person that is really easy to get along with? Are you the kind of person that wants to make a difference? Are you very analytical? You can go in and it's like, just because you get your degree as an accountant doesn't mean you need to work in an accounting firm. Mm-hmm. You can be a CFO for a life plan community and walk down a hall and put a smile on someone's face And yeah, you can balance the numbers and keep the organization of, you know, running and operating, but what does that, it fuels your soul when you're able to see people and knowing that you're making a difference in their lives. So it, just opening those opportunities.
It sounds like a lot of the organizations, whether it's a housing facilities for seniors or doctor's practices, because it's tied to Medicare, there are limits in income because there's limits on cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's where it's kind of trying to figure out where the reimbursement factor, what's the ultimate factor here?
Right.
Is it the policy? What you're going to be, obviously money drives a lot of all of that. So from a Medicare and a Medicaid perspective, if you're dual eligible, which a lot of the older population might be, it's trying to figure out a way, and there's always a way. And I think that's what we're trying to help identify is ways to get the kind of care to advocate, you know, for even as like I'm part of the sandwich generation. My mom is 81 now and she's doing really well. But it's also one of those that trying to help her navigate the healthcare system at 81 is very different than me trying to advocate the system at 52 when I've got, you know, full insurance provided.
Mm-hmm.
It's different options available for different levels of care, and it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, yeah. It almost feels like our society or media, you know, you can point your fingers at different ways of demonized Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, you know, hey, boomer.
Right.
Crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of stuff. It's just like, I don't remember that when I was growing up in regards to older adults of just, you know, stigmatizing them.
Right.
Other than
they're
growing old and grandma and grandpa's getting old, that sort of thing. It was never this caustic, who do you think you are, feel to it.
Think about where our legislative bodies are providing information or concepts that put people in fear. Oh, Medicare's going to run out of money and we can't afford to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side of that coin is, well, why do they not deal with pharmacy issues the way they do for veterans?
Mm-hmm.
So that Medicare has the same option of negotiating costs on pharmacy. Think of all the dollars they save there that could go into regular healthcare programs. It sounds like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah.
When you talk about no-brainers, it's one of those I read a recent statistic through a study that Becca Levy had mm-hmm. done, and it was about $68 billion were spent in Medicare, that it was around ageism-related issues. And so when you sit there and you think about a negative perception of aging that we have in our society, again, it's not about chronic illness. It's not about frailty. We need to shift that narrative. And part of Becca's study was that if you can shift the way you think about aging in a more positive way, just your individual self, you will live an average of 7.6 years longer just by shifting the way you think about it. It's not the I don't deserve this or, you know, aches and pains are a part of growing old. No, it's not. Just like depression's a part of getting old. No, it's not.
Right.
So what can you do now to offset that in a very positive way and live a more productive, active life?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And we need to add her book to our resource list for this podcast, and we will put a lot of information for our listeners to get an idea of what's going on. The Becca Levy's book is wonderful. The other book I like is Joanne Jenkins, who's the CEO of AARP, did the Disrupt Aging book, which is great. So if you're, you know, audience, if you're thinking about career moves into one of the support programs for older adults, there's a lot of great things written out there that you may want to check out. Mm-hmm. So, Okay. So, Jennifer, we talked about you held an aging summit, an opportunity for university departments to learn more about each other, the programs that they're using or that they have serving older adults, discover what services were still needed, and most importantly, what the community was saying that they needed. Tell us a little bit about the summit, and have you seen some results from all of this?
Yes, it was an amazing day that we had in September of this year on campus, and we had about 100 representatives at the event, and it was, again, shifting the narrative to an age-positive future. It was all about collaboration, education, research, all of the gems and jewels that Ohio State already has. And so, you know, me being just a few years into my career at Ohio State, you know, that was one of the things that I quickly discovered is that there's so many amazing resources that Ohio State has, but I don't know what opportunities I can have to collaborate with some of my colleagues in the College of Social Work that also talk about aging initiatives. And, you know, what can we do? So I think for me, it was, you know, 10 years ago, Ohio State held a small aging summit, and it was to quickly identify some of those programs that Ohio State might have. Program 60 was one of them, you know, talking about some of the research that was going on, but it hadn't been talked about. Aging hadn't been identified in those last 10 years. There had been pocketed silos of success. So when I came in and I was like, wait a minute, 2023, this is a perfect time 10 years later to say, all right, we had the initial conversation 10 years ago. So where are we now? And I did that because I know that in the next 10 years is when our demographic shift for our older population is going to be growing exponentially. So there was a method to my madness in the development of the summit. And so trying to not only say, all right, we had that conversation 10 years ago, here we are now, but let's do it from a very structured perspective. So I had a keynote national presenter from, she was the interim president and CEO of the American Society on Aging. And so she threw a whole lot of statistics out to everyone, just as that aha moment to kind of see where we are versus where we're going to be in the next 10 years, in the next 40 years as a society. And then we talked about some of the successes that were aging related on OSU's campus that have a more structured focus, like the Age Friendly Innovation Center through the College of Social Work, through the Center for Healthy Aging and Complex Care out of the College of Nursing. And then I also invited Jenny Carlson from, she's the assistant director for the Ohio Department of Aging. And so I wanted the state perspective because I knew that they just did their state plan on aging. And so if we talked about what's going on nationally, we talk about some of the successes that Ohio State has, but we know what what the state of Ohio's focus is and how they're going to support aging. That's when I said, all right, here's some of the presentations that we had, but the whole afternoon session was a setup for a World Cafe discussion that had all of the participants that were there during the day to answer three very important questions about what does an age-positive society look like, what resources already exist here in Central Ohio or on campus to have an age-positive focus, but then most importantly, what are we missing? Where are the opportunities that we have? And so the conversations that are developed around that World Cafe format kind of, they had already heard the information from the presenters during the day. And so they're like, that was the opportunity for them to identify their why, you know, what role they have and how they can do it. If it's research oriented, if it's clinical oriented, you know, what can we do to shift that narrative? And so I'm waiting for the final report. I worked with a marketing company to kind of help organize all of the thoughts during that day so that that final report is something that we will take and present to the leadership of the different colleges within the university mm-hmm. to help up the conversation around aging initiatives that we have in curriculum, research, policy, you name it.
Wonderful.
Okay. So the program Aging Connections is a hub of information for the university faculty, staff, and students regarding aging opportunities. You know, what resources and activities have been created? Talk about that. Is it open to the public even?
Yes. Okay. That's the beautiful thing. And it's only going to, because of what happened at the summit and some of the conversations that I've had since the event happened, getting some students that we have that are interested in aging to help redesign the website moving forward, to even grow the resources in there. And so the Aging Connections, the resources that are on there, it's aging.osu.edu is the website. And so the Aging Connections piece of it contains resources for different geriatric syndromes is what they call it from a clinical perspective. You know, some of the things that you may think of more with it, if it's regarding falls and fractures, you know, the difference between dementia, delirium, and depression in older adults. And so just being able to get that information to know what you can learn about versus what you can do about it proactively in that. And so some of the resources and websites that I've connected it to, because I know for me, there's nothing I hate worse than going down a rabbit hole and trying to figure out, you know, where these resources exist. So that's what I did with the development of this website initially, was to pull some of the resources that I know are already out there and put it in an easier spot based off of different criteria that we have, if it's service related, if it's, you know, medical related. And so from the aging lens, just try to get people connected to what's out there and have them advocate for their own care.
Okay. So how do you measure the success of that then?
The simple fact, when I get calls from people coming to me to say, I found you on the website,
gotcha.
You know, there's nothing more. And every opportunity that I have when I go out and to do presentations, to do conversations, I connect people to it.
Right,
because
to that resource.
Exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, you
makes your job a little bit easier then, too,
it
honestly,
does.
For presentations.
It does. Because
keynotes, whatever it might be. Yeah.
You name it. And so it's one of those, you know, my grandma always said, you can't grow if you don't know. So trying to make sure that you can get people thinking about aging in a more positive way, like, let's get all the information out there for them, but have it in one spot. So, you know, Ohio State has a very trusted reputation. And so let's put those resources in an area that have already been vetted. So it's, you know, you can kind of bank on that Buckeye family taking care of you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Again, just if it's not part of the Aging Connections Hub right now, that's where, again, that report that I'm going to take from the Aging Summit will open up the conversation to say, I'm all about learning what resources exist. It's helped me understand, you know, what does your program do, so that because I look through my entire life from the lens of the aging population,
right,
I can sit there and listen to what the program is and figure out if there's an opportunity to have that conversation woven in earlier with an older adult population.
Right. Having been on campus for 30 years and doing a special population of students, older adults in continuing ed, I can think back and remember where there were programs on campus that were easy, very easy to also serve older students. And it wasn't until you start having those conversations with the particular faculty or department chairs that they had that aha moment. So I'm thinking that there are probably a lot of things going on campus that with, you know, one little tiny minor tweak is going to be a phenomenal addition to the hub.
And exactly. And if it's like, have you ever thought about, you know, that's an opportunity to just get them to think about what the program could be,
right,
not just what it is, because everybody wants to grow awareness about what their program can do.
Exactly. Everybody's always looking for new populations to serve. Well, guess what? that population is not only there, but it could swarm right over you because there are so many.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And
good.
That, yeah.
Okay.
And we talk about, like, you know, I think that's one of the things that I always put aging into the conversation, because especially in the healthcare field, mm-hmm. you've heard the terminology like social determinants of health or making sure that we serve underrepresented populations. Well, aging touches every single one of those, but mm-hmm. we've never called it out as its own subset and unique right. demographic that we need to make sure is part of the conversation.
Right, mm. right. Jennifer, you know, there are likely many challenges to promoting services, programs, medical initiatives to this population of older patients. Tell us how your office helps to bridge those gaps in the needs of older patients through the educational certificate programs, workshops, and trainings that your office provides.
Right. There's a few initiatives that we've got going on right now. And one of the, we have a program called Topics in Gerontology. It's just several different learning modules. There's about 20 that are currently on there that cover different aspects of aging. And so we apply for continuing education credits for like nursing home administrators or social workers. So those that are already working out in the industry can get another knowledge base for, you know, what it's like to work with an older adult population. And so, you know, some of the things that we don't really think about because we've never really talked about them. So, you know, issues of abuse and neglect in an older adult population. You know, scamming, that's a form of abuse. And that's all included in those modules. So again, you don't know what you don't know, but if you can create those modules for people to be able to do at any time that they want, it just gives them that opportunity to learn more about what aging issues and challenges exist and what you can do to empower yourself to kind of age differently. You know, more proactively in it. And another program that we have is called SAGE. It's the Series in Applied Gerontology Education. And so it's a combination of three graduate level semester-based courses, but it's all online. And so what's really unique about it is, you know, it's a spring, summer, and fall. And if you complete all three courses, then you get a certificate of completion in gerontology. And who doesn't want to put that on their resume that says, mm-hmm. you know, you've got this baseline of knowledge in dealing with an older population. And so the courses are, you know, an introduction to what gerontology is. The summer course talks about case studies when you're dealing with, here's the population that you're dealing with. And because of the different students that are a part of that online course, we have both graduate level students on campus as well as professional students out in the community. And then some of our program 60 component our students are also taking this course. And so when you're talking about working with an older adult population, I love it when some of the program 60 learners are a part of the courses mm-hmm. because that's the exact population we're talking about. So if I have a pharmacy student who's taking the course, then my program 60 student is having that conversation with them about what it's like to have your, you know, medications interact with each other. And it's kind of like, oh, never thought of it that way.
Or not be able to open the bottle.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's kind of a real life situation scenario right there in class.
Exactly. Hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a really... So like one of the goals that I have as well is to, as I'm thinking about what can I do from an education perspective, is to create, within the College of Medicine is an elder care certification that we can have for all of our healthcare workers so that we get that baseline level of, you know, caregiving knowledge but what it's like to work with an older adult population. And so when you cover the facets of gerontology from a physical, physiological, spiritual awareness, and in that's what is the core components that you're putting in this certification program, it's just a really unique way to kind of set yourself up for success in knowing that since our population is going to be growing, that you've got that skill set to meet that need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there seems to be almost a level of emotional intelligence going on here too, of just that those addressing that age to understand, to empathize, if nothing else, to almost break that, go over a generation. Because, I mean, yeah, a younger adult doesn't know how to speak to an older adult. I didn't when I was a 20-year-old.
No.
You just don't.
But we didn't have cell phones back then either. So, you know, to know. But I think that's one of the things, too, is that realizing where we are in our society right now is because of some of the advances that we've had have also created a generation right now that isn't as in touch with their feelings about how to interact with somebody. I mean, it's one of those that, you know, if bullying existed or we got picked on as a kid and, you know, back then I was told suck it up. And so it's one of those scenarios where it's kind of like everybody's opinion matters, but not like everybody needs to be the whole participation trophy thing, you know?
Right. Right.
You know, that's not the way life is. Yeah. So why are we trying to make it that's the way life is? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, trying to get a younger generation and, you know, again, using technology as a way to, like, my mom's community has middle school students come in and they call it the Buckeye Buddy program. And they interview the residents in her community. And that way it gives the student a perspective to learn what it was like, you know, back in the Depression.
The old days.
All these things that you talked about in history class.
And how different it wasn't.
Exactly. Exactly.
We all have to go to school. We all had these situations.
Right. So it's one of those things, well, you don't understand. You weren't, yes, I did. I still, you know, I didn't have to deal with that,
it's a human experience.
And at the same time, because of that savvy that they might have with technology, then they're showing my mom what it's like to do a selfie and that just connection that happens organically is the most profound thing to witness when you're sitting there and, you know, you can put the academic term on it and call it intergenerational programming. It's basically just appreciation for one another.
Well, and familiarity breeds
comfort.
Kindness and comfort and gets rid of the fear that we have of people who are different than we are.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And that happens just in lots of scenarios, but this is a good one. Going back to the topics in gerontology and the certificate program, are you getting a lot of inquiries from outside of the Ohio State community in Central Ohio to participate in those programs?
Yes, and actually that's a great thing about having it be online. I actually just got an application yesterday to the SAGE program from somebody in California that wanted to participate in it. And so because it offers that opportunity for anyone beyond this small island that we call Central Ohio to be a part of it, it just adds to, you know, the dynamics of what is going to be taught in that particular course because of the makeup that you have with the student population.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Your office also partners with other agencies throughout the region in furthering not just the services for older adults, but also careers in gerontology fields. Can you mention some of those you are collaborating with in your current projects?
Yeah. I do a lot of collaboration with an organization called the American Association for Service Coordinators. And their office is located here in Central Ohio, but they are a national organization. And service coordination is kind of an unknown treasure. Service coordinators are basically dot connectors that work in affordable housing properties across the country to connect residents to resources that they have available to them. And so when you think about a lot of senior housing properties are older adults with fixed incomes in there. And so this is the population that they're working with. And so we've developed an accreditation program with the American Association of Service Coordinators that if they complete these learning modules that are based off of the core competencies for what service coordination is, and it's a HUD-funded program, that they have to have these certain level of expertise to call themselves a service coordinator. And when they complete the education and they take the exam and they pass it, then they can call themselves a professional service coordinator. And so that designation program has helped to open a lot of doors for opportunities for service coordinators to get a higher level of recognition, both internally within their organizations, mm-hmm. but also federally from a policy and advocacy standpoint for ASC to then be able to go to HUD and say, we need more funding to support this amazing program because service coordinators keep the residents in their homes instead of in the emergency rooms. And so because they've been able to connect them with home-based community programs that exist, they're not going to the ER for every emergency mm-hmm. that they may have. Mm-hmm. And so it saves dollars. And so when you can create those opportunities for them to know what exists and how it can benefit them, it's a really great way to kind of make sure that that has an awareness and accreditation to it. And we've also worked with the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging. There's a part of their program that's called they're developing a COAAA university is what they call it. And a lot of the case managers that they have that work for the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging, they don't necessarily have a background in working with an older adult population, and then they're thrown into working with an older adult population. So creating the education and some of the modules through our topics in gerontology, some of the presentations that we will do with their new hire staff during three different orientation cycles throughout the year, those are addressing what it is that they're going to be seeing when they're dealing with their clientele, you know, mm-hmm. issues of abuse and neglect and what it actually looks like. When you hear that word abuse, you know, it doesn't always mean physical harm.
Right.
It can be emotional abuse. It can be financial abuse. And just pointing out to them some of those things that they never really thought of in that way. You know, mm-hmm. it's kind of taking that knowledge of what you know are issues and challenges, but also opportunities for them to make that impact and to know how to do that.
Almost taking it the next step.
Exactly.
Seeing it, okay, when you hear that, ask another question.
Exactly. It doesn't, right, exactly. Yeah. And so it's one of those, like I always, as a grief recovery specialist, you know, one of my favorite things that I learned was like, if I ask you, you know, how are you? And you're like, oh, I'm fine. Well, I can't let you stay with I'm fine because fine stands for feelings inside not expressed. Mm-hmm. It's not an emotion. You know, you can be mad, you can be happy, you can be sad, but you can't be fine. Mm-hmm. And so that's when
it's
you.
Like China.
Exactly.
Fine China.
Yeah, exactly.
You take it to the next level and say, are you really? You know, and mm-hmm. be like, get to the core of what the issue is, because the more you can draw that information, knowledge is power. Yeah. And that's when you know how to help and what next step you need to take. Yeah.
Are you working with the other AAAs around the state of Ohio then? Eventually?
Not directly, okay. But yeah. But yeah. It's one of those that, again, because a few of the colleagues that were part of the O4A, mm-hmm. you know, were at the Aging Summit. Again, it's a great opportunity for these conversations to happen after the fact from that summit to be able to say, how can we partner? What can we do?
Yeah.
And I have to give a shout out to all of our friends at COAAA. As a member of the advisory council, it is a phenomenal organization. And like everything else we've talked about today, we will be putting together a list of all the resources that Jennifer's given us and that we've talked about during this podcast. So listeners, be ready to see all this information on our website.
Yes.
So speaking of information, so my next question to you, there's a lot of information out there, but it is very difficult to convey this information to an older population. What would you like to ensure we tell our audience about finding medical services and programs to assist older adults in our community? And we're concentrating on Central Ohio, but those tips may be also good for anybody outside of Central Ohio too.
Yeah. And so I think it's one of those that, like, you know what some of the more trusted resources are that you've heard available out there. And so I think the biggest thing is, like, you've got to advocate for what you want when it comes to your level of care. Don't just be okay with hearing a diagnosis, but not understanding all of the components of it and what your options are. And I think that's one of the key things of, you know, again, the importance of making that Aging Connections hub that we have at Ohio State a one-stop shop opportunity for people to get connected to those resources that we have available, not only within Ohio State's community, but, you know, what are some of the national organizations that I might want to learn more about when it comes to, you know, Alzheimer's or opportunities with getting funding support like the through the area agencies on aging. Like, we don't know what we don't know. And I think, you know, for me, it was, I've worked in the aging space for over 17 years, but it wasn't until my mom needed to move after my dad's death and we had to figure out what was next for mom, that because I knew who to go to get some of those answers about what's possible, it shortened the road. But our healthcare system is a very broken navigation if you don't know what opportunities exist out there. And so don't be afraid to reach out. Don't be afraid to, like, go onto, you know, the Wexner Medical Center website and just Google, you know, geriatrics and see what pops up. And just to see some of the amazing research and programs that already exist, you know, it's, you don't have to go down those rabbit holes of not getting the information and taking that long. Because I know, like, for me, my office handles education. I don't handle patient appointments. But I can't tell you how many calls I get from the community that is from a loved one who was just told by their mom's doctor that they need to have a geriatric assessment, but can I help them with their appointment? I don't schedule the appointments, but I can get you directly to the clinic that I know that does the cognitive evaluations. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. when I had to go through that with my own mom several years ago, that is not a journey that you want to wait 3 to 4 months to begin. Mm. You need to have answers now in that. And so any chance I have to connect someone from the community about what resources exist in there as an opportunity to shorten that journey for them to get the answers that they need to advocate for their own healthcare, that's what I'm there for.
It seems that so many of our seniors are alone, though. You know, your mom has you and you can figure out that system. Chances are pretty good the seniors aren't listening to this podcast, but they may have friends, family, neighbors who know they need some help. We, in the state of Ohio, the Office on Aging has an ombuds program for anybody in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether they do, they have that outside of nursing homes, but if you are in a nursing home and there's a problem, there is an ombuds services there for those patients. But are there other kinds of, AAA may have a program that, or if that individual has a case manager, mm-hmm. I think what I'm trying to say here in a roundabout way is if an individual is having problems, you need to keep asking questions until you get the answer.
Definitely.
Don't ask a question of one person and think that's enough information.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to just keep going out there and talking to everybody. You might get a whole lot of no's, but all they have to do is get that one Jennifer who's going to get them to the right place.
Exactly. And that's where, you know, not only connecting them internally to the resources that Ohio State and the Medical Center has to offer, but like you said, COAAA, getting them onto the, if I can get somebody to their website, then they can do the research right. about what and, opportunities and programs exist.
And every county in Ohio has some kind of an aging services office.
Yes.
They're called
yes.
different things.
Right.
And I'm going to take a huge leap guess here that in other states, there is probably something, some entity. If you are in a county outside of Ohio and you don't see something in your county government office listing that says older adults or seniors, or call the county office and talk to your commissioners.
Exactly.
They are going to have somebody who's going to be able to help you.
Exactly. Okay. And that's where, you know, again, just trying to make sure that people get connected to what some of the things that should be so obvious to us in our society and yet remain buried treasures.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. When my mom and I were taking care of my dad, and he was, every time he was in the hospital, every afternoon she and I would sit down and we'd come up with a list of three or four questions of things that we needed information on. And when she was with him that next day, every person who walked in his hospital room, she would ask him the same questions. If it was a nurse, if it was a doctor, if it was the dietitian, whomever walked in that door, she asked them the same questions. And at the end of the day, we'd review all the answers she got, and we'd kind of figure out, like, what's the chances of the most logical answer? You know, because everybody, of course, was giving her different answers. But you just have to keep asking questions.
You do. And don't be afraid to do that, because mm-hmm. that's right. where, again, you know, we all want to, you know, treat someone else as you want to be treated. That's basically what it all boils down to. And so, you know, there's too much information out there, but there's not enough people that are willing to kind of step up and connect the resources to someone who's on the struggle bus.
Right.
And especially when it comes to, you know, dealing with an older adult population, you know, cognitive evaluations are one of the biggest things that's like the next first step that they have to take. And the last thing, you know, 3 to 4 month wait to get that cognitive evaluation? No. So if I can immediately try and help to put some of their mind at ease by saying, you know what, Dr. Shari had developed this test called the SAGE test, and it's now available online for you to be able to do it yourself to kind of put your mind at ease. Like the way that you score on this test, it'll tell you if you need to seek that next step action. And sometimes just that initial knowledge of knowing what you can do to either figure out if you got to take another step forward in your level of care, or if, you know what, I'm not there yet based off of this score, I'm good.
All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. No, that's true. That's true. Oh, we always ask our guests if they have any last words of wisdom that they'd like to add. Not that you haven't had a ton of them already, but it's that that last gasp of like, hey, I want to say this. But do you have any other suggestions or advice for our listeners today?
I think the biggest thing that I want to encourage everyone to do is to just kind of change the way you think about aging. You know, it's not something to be feared. It's not something that is, you know, just a debilitating time in our life. It's something to be celebrated. And I learned that when I was dealing in the hospice industry. And it's some of the greatest gifts to be present in someone's life and know that you've made a difference to them because you've validated what matters to them to the core of that. And so being able to have that, you know, we all kind of joke about getting older, and that's changing that narrative. You know, that's really an ageist philosophy when you know, oh, you're over the hill. What hill? You know, it's kind of like, why does it always have to be a negative perception? So I encourage, you know, I want to encourage everybody to kind of think about the way you want to age. Do you want to do it better? And, you know, at 52, I'm celebrating 52, you know, so own your age,
right?
You know, and you've got to figure out what do I want to be when I grow up is what I always say. So at 80, what do I want to be able to do? So backtrack, and here at 50, what changes do I need to make to myself, both positive and negative, to be able to have that kind of life that I want in there? And it's a beautiful thing. So flip that lens. You'll live 7.6 years longer if you start thinking of it in more positive light.
Right.
Very good. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Our expert, Jennifer Bechtel from The Ohio State University's Wexner Medical Center Office of Gerontology and Geriatrics. I got it. Goodness gracious. I remember those business cards.
It's a mouthful.
Those business cards at OSU that are like two cards long. So, again, thank you to our expert, Jennifer, for joining us today. Listeners, thank you for joining us. And do not forget to check our show notes on the website for contact information and the resources we discussed today. You can find that information on our website at lookingforwardourway.com. We're looking forward to hearing your feedback on this and any of our podcast episodes.